T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're back. It's the Food Show with Allie Lofton, the kooky oyster broad, or oyster lady Lofton, whichever you prefer. We've had a great first hour. Oh my gosh, it just zipped by. Beatrice Germain, new executive director from the French American Gulf Coast Chamber of Commerce. She was fantastic. I got to start brushing up on my French, y'all. I took it in high school, and then I switched to Spanish in college, and now I just got newly invigorated. I need to just do my Spanish again. So call us, 260-6368. We're going to be talking about cheese for the next hour, which I could talk about cheese forever. And Marianne is going to be so sad. Well, probably not. I mean, she's with her grandbabies for a week, so I'm sure she's over the moon. But she is going to be so sad that she missed us, because in the newsletter just 2 days ago and numerous times, she said, "I don't know if I could live in a world without cheese." And the guest that I have here today couldn't agree 100% more. In fact, she's spent her whole professional career curating this lifestyle around one of life's most precious delicacies, which is cheese. And she's brought a spread here today. And actually, I'm going to tell you, Liz. So it's Liz Thorpe, and we're going to introduce her here in just a minute. But we are... I'm embarrassed to admit, I love cheese. Now, I'm not a cheese connoisseur, but I do like to go and read, and I do my research, you know, and I feel like I know all of the great places to buy cheese, and I've eaten enough to have some comparisons and know what I like, okay? But I feel like I'm about ready to get schooled on what truly excellent cheese is. But that's okay. I'm going to, you know, put myself on the sacrificing pit here and just start from scratch as if I knew nothing, and I'm sure at the end of all of this, I'm going to feel like I really need to up my cheese game. So Liz Thorpe is here with Fête de Fromage, and that's the festival going on this weekend. But before we dive into that, we're going to dive into her professional history and on how she arrived at the expertise level she is with all things cheese. So Liz,
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thrilled to be here. Why should anybody live in a world without cheese?
I don't know.
Well, luckily, we don't have to make that hard choice.
Luckily, we don't have to.
Yeah. So cheese has been my life professionally for almost 20 years now. And personally, too.
Cheese professionally.
But it's like there's like the live work divide doesn't really exist for me with the cheese. But yeah, I started in cheese in the early 2000s. I left a job in investment banking and I went to work at a store in New York City called Murray's Cheese, which at that time was like this little hole in the wall in Greenwich Village.
You left investment I don't know any of this, so it's going to be all new. You left investment banking. Was this one of those like life's just like moments?
Yes.
Because this is a complete career change that you're about ready to tell us about.
Yes, it was. It was definitely a career change. But yeah, no, it was one of life's moments. I was newly out of college and I realized, oh, when you graduate from college, you work. And when you work, like you spend all your time working. And if you don't like what you do,
yes,
you're really miserable. And if you have the luxury to be able to pursue a job that you are passionate about, maybe that could make it better. And I, for some weird reason that I still can't explain to people, like I got really interested in cheese. I lived in Brooklyn.
Because it's delicious.
I know. And I think for me, like, also, I just didn't realize there are literally thousands of different cheeses. Like, I grew up in Connecticut and went to the supermarket and there was like cheddar and sharp cheddar and mild cheddar. And like, that was it. Havarti. And anyway, so whatever, for some reason I got really interested and I took a plunge and I went to work at the shop in New York in 2002, and that was how it started. And you know,
why this cheese shop? Now I'm curious.
So Murray's is the it was and is the oldest cheese shop in Manhattan, and it's sort of like an institution. You know, New York has these food institutions. If you want smoked salmon, you go to Russ and Daughter's. Yeah. If you want the best bagel, if you want the best, you know, everyone. It's like if you want the best whatever, and Murray's was like where you went if you wanted the best cheese. But when I started working there, it was this one little shop, and we grew the business. I was the vice president of the company for 10 years and grew it from this little tiny thing to this massive national brand and company. And along the way, got to, you know, start all our businesses, started an import company, worked with chefs all over
through this Murray's company.
Yeah, supplying, you know, the French Laundry and all the four-star restaurants in New York with, you know, the best cheese. I used to ship cheese to New Orleans in FedEx boxes to the Delachaise, y'all, on St. Charles Avenue back in like 2004, 2005. It was like right, I mean, it couldn't have been much later than 2005. But anyway, so yeah, I was like cheese central for chefs all over the country because back then, like, you couldn't. Like, now you can get all these things everywhere.
It wasn't imported the way it is.
It wasn't as available as it is now. And so anyway, I was there for 10 years. I wrote a couple of books. I left the company in 2012 and started my own business. And my family and I moved to New Orleans 5 years ago. So here I am.
Okay. So, I mean,
like,
it's not
Santa cheese with like the sack over my shoulder.
It's not unusual to hear people from New York or residing in New York for a long time, moving to New Orleans.
Especially like I'm a Brooklynite. I lived in Brooklyn the whole 15 years I was in New York, and there's this like weird Brooklyn New Orleans connection in particular I've noticed. But I mean, in my case, my husband's mother grew up here. He's got a lot of family here, so he had a family connection to the city. But I mean, New Orleans is like nowhere else. It is such a singular city, and New York is such a singular city, and they're very different. But I don't know. I think
people who want to be in a place, the culture, in the same ways, even though it's not the same city.
Yeah, and the pace is different, but just like you're in a place where every morning you wake up and you're like, "Damn, I live in a place that's just like just about here. It's like only here."
Yeah. There's an appreciation for it that's not the same anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you get that. And people say that about New York as well.
Been
there.
Totally. So anyway, my husband started a business here. We moved here 5 years ago. And my company is a consulting company, so I can be anywhere. So I'm lucky enough to be here.
Oh, that's great.
But last year, actually, Beatrice, the woman who was just on with you, last year the French American Chamber of Commerce decided they wanted to start a cheese festival because, you know, people think France and they think cheese. Fromage. And since I live here, they kind of approached me about getting involved.
Easy. Yeah.
And
perfect fit.
I did a little bit last year. And this year I took over the festival with my friend and partner, Rachel Heligman. So we're co-directing this year. And we've grown the festival from like a one-day festival to this year, it's like 3 days of cheese events.
In its second year.
Yeah.
This is still like in a festival terms, this is infancy.
Yeah, and there is the New Yorker in me still that's like, no, like we need to grow like 700% every year.
Right.
Like, come on,
the
chop,
ambition.
Chop. I look at something like Tales of the Cocktail and I'm like, could there be like a month of cheese in New Orleans?
Yes.
Where like, you know, all the restaurants that where there's like programming throughout the city. Like that to me is, because cheese can be so many different things and it can be, I don't know. It's just very easy to integrate into life, I find.
Yes, absolutely. So. And I mean, oh my goodness. I was just thinking like, and I remember I was going to go, and I was telling Beatrice this, I was going to go last year, but as you know with kids, tis ear infection season and cold season. And so you never know when that's going to pop up. But that was supposed to be date night last year.
Yes.
And so then when I was looking into it again this year, I'm like, it's only the second year? I feel like, where's this festival been my whole life?
Well, we're making up for lost time.
Right. In those early years of kids, there is no concept of time.
No, I was just going to say, it's sort of like the before and after.
Right. So It's in its infancy, but so they have an event tonight, sold out. I'm only telling you all that because this is how big this thing has gotten in just 2 years. An event tonight, which you're leading, which is sold out.
Yeah.
A Friday night event, sold out. But what you do have left is Saturday. So when we all tell you all more about that after we talk about Liz's books, it's going to be a good time Saturday. It's going to
be great. Yeah, and it is like the big cheese of the three events Saturday.
No pun intended.
Saturday
at all
is the biggin. So yeah.
So I'll,
also I brought some. Yeah, I brought cheese and wine because that's like how I am.
I mean,
but
that's
may I open this so we can sip some bubbles and talk books and talk cheese and our palates will be wetted for when
she's
we're ready to do a tasting.
She's a pro at this now. So when the cork comes out,
I thought it would be fun to pop it on air.
It's
There we go. Doesn't that sound so fun and celebratory?
In the meantime, if anybody has questions, I'm going to have a ton of questions, so I might beat you to it. But if anybody has questions, including you, Doug, who just stepped in and was, I'm going to eat all the cheese. If anybody has questions for Liz, please call us, 260-6368. And don't worry, I will take no offense, and I said this the last time I was on with the show. I do not feel like callers are indicative of quality of the show. Sometimes, and because I listen all the time, cheers. Because I listen all the time, you know, some days you have shows where people just want to absorb. You know, they just want to absorb the content of the show, and they might call in 2 days later. Or you're driving and picking up the kids, like me, from school, and Marianne will be talking about some interesting topic, and she's like, well, somebody please call. I'm like, damn, I can't call. Or I do call, and the kids are, like, screaming in the background. So that's not effective. So don't worry. We're not taking offense if y'all don't have time to call in. But if you do, 260-6368. We're about to dive into some of these cheeses. I'm about to get the edification of a lifetime on all cheese and realize that I have been eating inferiorly over cheese the past probably 20 years of my life. And Liz is going to educate us all on those. But in the meantime, tell me. Can you tell me about the development of the books?
Yeah, sure. So I've written 3 books about cheese. People ask me if I'm going to write any more, and the answer is no. I don't have anything else. I have nothing left to say. I've said it all.
But there's so many cheeses, though.
I know, but like, yo, I've written like 1,000 pages about cheese. more, probably. But anyway, the first book I wrote was I co-authored the Murray's Cheese Handbook, the company I work for in New York. We put that out in 2007. And it was like a pretty revolutionary book because, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of times sort of like that I'm going to school you. And I can, and I will. And I hope people might have questions because I love to answer questions. But I also love to point out that for me, like, cheese shouldn't be a snobby elite food. And I am very nerdy and I get into subjects and I love to learn a lot about things. But I also I hate it when things feel kind of like unapproachable. And for me, the fun of it is it's kind of the fun of exploration versus like, you know, I don't want people to feel like, oh, I don't know the right cheese. So like I'm not worthy.
No. I totally appreciate that. But I love to absorb information.
Yeah,
I am
me too.
Lifetime learner bookworm.
Yeah.
You know,
and that was really so the first book I did like to that end was kind of. The books about cheese up till that point had been really like, you know, like you either have to like be serious or you're not worthy. And the Murray's Cheese Handbook was like a Zagat's Guide to Cheese. So it was really like short, pithy little entries about a couple hundred different cheeses. And so that's very much my tone and my style. My second book is called The Cheese Chronicles. And that was very different. It was more of a memoir, like how did a girl get into a job in cheese? And it was all about my travels all over the United States. I've traveled extensively visiting cheesemakers. And so it's stories of all these different producers and kind of and information about sort of the state of cheese in the United States only. And very near and dear to my heart. A lot of my friends are in that book, became my friends when I met them on my travels. And then my most recent book is called The Book of Cheese. And it was named that because, you know, hopefully if you buy one book about cheese, it would be The Book of Cheese. And that is like a massive reference, very beautiful photography.
Like if you want to dive deep in.
And if you just want one, like if you're sort of like there's a wine lover in my life, like this would be a great birthday or Christmas gift for that mm-hmm. person. It's sort of like a compliment, you know, but if you want one book that's going to sort of give you the overview, it's got about 400 different cheeses in it. But it's also got my approach to sort of the taxonomy of cheese, how I categorize it, and how you can kind of understand what the categories are and branch out from what you like and find new things that you're going to enjoy.
That is the tone for we're about ready to go to break.
Okay,
so
yes.
We're going to go to break for a minute. And when we get back, we'll be talking to Liz Thorpe more. And eating some of these delicious cheeses, which we're going to describe to you all so you can figure out how to go out and get them and eat them yourselves and make cheese approachable.
Awesome.
Thanks, y'all. Be back. Liz, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 35. Do you? And I watched reruns of this. Do you remember this?
I feel
Bewitched.
Like I watched the original.
This is...
Cheese keeps you young.
Yes. That's right. So we're back. Allie Lofton. Oyster Lady Lofton, the Kooky Oyster Broad. I'm here talking today with Liz Thorpe, cheese expert connoisseur, and we're about to dive into some cheeses. Don't worry, Doug. We're going to hook you up, man. I'm going to make sure you got fed with some bubblies, too. So we popped the cork on some bubblies, and we're about to dive into cheese. And Liz is going to tell us all about what she brought today. She was sharing with us about her books. The Book of Cheese is what we ended on, which now I have to go out and get the Book of Cheese so that I can like really indulge myself, because I'm a total nerd when I'm researching things for the first time. So I'm going to let her tell us about what she brought, and we're going to do some tastings. Gosh, I'm so excited. It looks delicious. And then as we do that, we're going to talk about this development with this very new festival, only in its second year, but nearly all sold out except for the best day, which is Saturday, where you can eat your heart out in cheese. And if there doesn't sound like a more beautiful, wonderful day spent but eating your heart out in cheese, I do not know what it is. So, Liz, thank you so much for being here with us today.
My pleasure. Tell me
what we got going on.
Well, here, I made you a plate. I'm
okay.
Pass
yes.
it across. So I brought a selection of cheeses. I sort of, when I'm doing a cheese tasting kind of broadly, I try to have a range of styles, textures, milk types, right? So people often ask me, like, well, if I'm going to do a, you know, spread of cheese at the holidays, I have company coming over, like, what should I do? And so sort of I did today what I think people should do, which is like 3 to 5 cheeses, and you want to hit a range of styles. So when I say that, I mean you want something buttery, creamy, and soft. You want something firmer, harder, more aged. Maybe you want a blue cheese. So we've got all three of those things plus some other randos in there. And I also, I mean, obviously, I brought cheeses that are from makers who are going to be participating in Fête de Fromage, the cheese festival, this Saturday. So one of the things, I mean, we've been talking about how we're both secretly, seriously geeky and like to dive in and learn. And for me, one of the things that I wanted this festival to do that was maybe a little different from the typical festival was to give people a chance to learn. And so, yes, there are a ton of cheeses. More than 150 will be there on Saturday, but they're all there.
Oh, that sounds like a dream.
Yeah, yes. But they're all there with the makers or the importers who are responsible for bringing those cheeses to the market. So it's a chance to like talk to the people behind the scenes. Maybe the person who makes it, maybe the person who goes to Europe and decides this cheese is worth bringing into the U.S. And it's a chance to ask questions and learn a little bit more. So all of these cheeses will be there. All of these makers will be there. But what I did for you is I made you a plate. We're going to start at 12 o'clock and taste clockwise around the plate.
Yes.
So that means we're going to I organize things to go from milder to stronger flavors. And so we always start with the young, creamy, runny.
So when you're organizing a tray spread, you're to do
that's
it this way.
Yeah, the same idea. Or even like when I have people over and I don't want to be, you know, like have it be cheese school. People are just hanging out. But it's helpful to throw out some tips for friends and guests. And, you know, so I'll tell people like, hey, I recommend starting here and then, you know, ending here. Because if you taste a really strong, spicy blue cheese and then you try to taste a mild, buttery, delicate brie, we have both of those today, you're not going to taste the brie. Like the blue is
yeah,
so
it's
strong
gonna overpower
and
it.
So overwhelming.
Yep.
So it's kind of like if you're going to have both, like let people know give them a heads up that they should taste the brie first. And then if they want to, then they'll do whatever they want.
I feel like intuitively I should know that, but I'm not sure. I mean, I've bought a lot of, you know, what I feel like are nice cheeses based on what I do know and put them out. But I don't think that I've ever, like, deliberately arranged them that way.
So. Yeah, and it's, I mean, also, like, look, we're all sitting around drinking and talking. Like, you're going to reach for whatever's closest to you unless somebody says there might be another way to approach this.
Yes.
So, you know, that's basically my strategy. And so the first cheese that I would recommend you try is the one at 12 o'clock on your plate. And you can tell by looking at it. It's got that white, soft skin on the outside of the cheese. And, you know, most people would look at it and be like, oh, it's
God,
a brie.
I love brie.
And that's what it is. But it's a brie plus.
Okay.
Right? So
what is the, oh, God.
The
so
plus
good.
Is that it has had cream added to it. We were so good. Talking about the cuisine of New Orleans. I think this is a city that appreciates a dash of cream.
Mm-hmm. In everything.
Yeah. So you take this style that's like buttery and rich and you add cream to it. And it becomes what's called a triple creme or a triple cream. And that just means it's more buttery and rich.
Sorry, baby. So, if you're out there listening right now, I'm eating all this cheese without you. Sorry.
So, I mean, this is like a very traditional French style brie originated in France, in northwestern France. And the triple creme was an invention of the French. But now this style can be made in different places. This particular one is called Le Bon Vie. So it's like a brand you can look for, and it's available like all over the market here. You can find it in the supermarket, you can find it at specialty stores. So Le Bon Vie does lots of French and French style cheeses, goat cheeses and brie style cheeses, and they'll have all of them at the festival on Saturday.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah,
just diving into it. So I recognize that brand name.
Okay, cool.
I recognize that brand name, and of course when I go, so you miss the times I buy the cheeses at Martin's.
Okay, awesome.
Or Dornach's.
Yep.
And they usually have like four different brie styles out. I mean,
it's
how
the
do
most
I even
popular,
know what
it's
I'm...
the most popular style of cheese. Like, if you look at sales, so in my day job where I, you know, when I'm not making cheese festivals happen, I work with clients all over the country. And when you look at what sells nationally, brie is one of the most popular categories of
so
cheese.
So delicious.
So, yeah, I would expect they would have four or six or even more. And sometimes they're called brie or camembert, and sometimes they have other names. So basically, if it looks like a brie, if it's creamy and has a white soft skin, it's in the same family. It's going to have the same general flavor profile. But there's hundreds of different brie-style cheeses. So, you know, you have to do the hard work of tasting them all and figuring out which ones you like the best. But there are French versions, and a number of American producers make awesome brie-style cheeses now. So also we've got some sparkling wine, and this is one of my favorite combos because the cheese is so mouth-coating and, like, rich. And then you drink a dry white wine that's got bubbles in it, and the bubbles kind of scrub the fat off your palate, so you're like, oh yeah, I can just like eat another piece and then like take another sip. And this is, we have
and it becomes a pattern.
Yeah, totally. And see how that works. And then you're like, oh, it's all gone. But we've got all of the wines at the festival are French wines, and we have not a true champagne, but a champagne style. Mm-hmm. So a French sparkling wine. And we also at one of the things we did this year that I'm excited about that's new is we did recommended pairings at all of the beverage stations. So if you buy a glass of wine, there are four choices, or you buy a beer, there are five choices, or you buy a hard cider. We have our recommended, like, if you buy this drink, you gotta try. This is the one cheese you gotta try.
See, I would love that. Like, that's the nerd in me.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
That's the person in me that wants to just understand and absorb more information about the things that I'm experiencing.
Yeah, and it's like, there's 150 cheeses. Like, maybe someone out there is gonna try all of them, but most people are not. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, if you're drinking, like, whatever, an Urban South Holy Roller IPA, like, go to Old Croc and taste the cheddar and with the IPA, because it's an amazing pairing.
Yeah.
And then, like, That's what I mean about sort of trying to build some education.
I mean, that's an experience, like, though, in itself. I feel like, you know, that's what we do here in New Orleans is, like, you know, I mean, some of us just want to eat and drink and not really think much about it. And I appreciate that, too, at times.
But, like, you don't have to. I've done the thinking for you.
Yes, that's right. Oh, God. Now I'm all set.
You just drink and eat. Just follow my directions.
Yes. I like that even more. Okay, so I'm going to my 3 o'clock.
Yeah, you're going clockwise. So to the right. The next one is, and I don't recommend the rind on this. You can see it's like a hard waxed rind.
Yep.
Generally, when the rind is hard and crusty, not recommended. When it's soft and skin like, it is. But this is a harder cheese. And this is a Gouda. So Gouda is traditionally a Dutch cheese, but there is this awesome Dutch woman who lives in Wisconsin. My last name is Thorpe, and this woman, Marika, has a farm in Thorpe, Wisconsin. But that's not why I love her. She moved here from the Netherlands and really missed traditional Dutch cheese and started making cheese on her family's dairy farm. And so she makes only Goudas.
I am surprised for you to tell me that this is a Gouda.
This is a young Gouda.
This is a young Gouda. But why is it white?
Well, it's interesting because actually when we look at the next cheese, if you look at it, is even whiter. But it has to do with what the animals eat. So grass will change the color of milk. Animals who are eating straw as opposed to fresh grass, that can impact the color. And also as cheese ages, it gets darker. So a younger cheese is always going to be more ivory colored, lighter in color than like an aged cheese. And you told me earlier you're a fan of aged Gouda. I have one of those too. So I've got a young one and an aged one. The aged ones are often dyed, so they look orange.
Okay. This, doesn't it have some sort of enzyme in it? Like the yellow
yeah,
color?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's just a coloring agent, a plant-derived coloring agent. But this one doesn't have it because the young Goudas typically are not colored.
This is really surprising, and I will tell you, I am not typically a fan of Goudas, and I'm going to tell you right now, after eating this, it must be because I'm eating the wrong frickin' Goudas, okay?
Well,
this is spectacular, and I'll tell you a story. So I don't know the name of it, but I only know the story of it. It was a five-year aged Gouda that it crystallized and was crunchy from the crystallization. So I discovered this cheese in 2013 in this little specialty cheese shop that opened up in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. They were not there very long. The guy, I think he said he commuted from New Orleans. I think he tried to open up his own business in this cheese shop in Ocean Springs, and I don't think it was embraced well. So we're going to go to break here for just a quick minute, then we'll come back and finish. We're going to get it all in, y'all. We're going to tell you all about it. We're going to get these cheeses wrapped up, and we're going to tell you about the festival that you can go to on Saturday. 105.3 FM HD2, Liz Thorpe here with Allie Lofton. Thanks, y'all. Welcome back, y'all. You're listening to the Tom Fitzmaurice Food Show. Maybe you're just tuning in because you're about ready to start your commute home. You're listening to your guest hostess for the day, Allie Lofton, the Oyster Lady. And, you know the business I have, ceramic oyster shells, functional cookware. I like to talk about my business, but more than anything, I like to talk about and highlight other people in the food industry and amplify their voices and their businesses to tell you more about how to eat and drink around New Orleans. So that's what I'm here doing today with Liz Thorpe. She's brought us some delicious cheeses. We started with a triple cream brie.
Yep, you got it.
And now we've moved to a Gouda. And I told her just before break that Gouda has never really been my favorite. I don't know that I can pinpoint why, but this one is different. It's delicious. It's a little sharp.
Yeah, it's, well, she,
the Wisconsin
Marika
lady.
Gouda is what it's the brand is Marika Gouda, but that's her name is Marika Penterman. And she only works with raw milk. So that's pretty unusual. You know, cheese can be made of raw milk or pasteurized milk. And in this country, it has to be aged for at least 60 days if you're going to work with raw milk, right? So the brie styles,
due to the bacteria,
the fresh
right?
cheeses, like all of those young cheeses will never be raw milk in this country. They will in Europe, but not here. But once you're over 60 days, it's up to the cheesemaker. And so Marika's cheeses are all at least 3 months old. Many of them are more aged than that. But yeah, I mean, I think part of the reason that there's so much complexity and flavor is because of the quality of her milk. And I was mentioning she is Dutch and sort of was raised and taught to make Dutch cheese in the Netherlands. So she's really bringing a lot of expertise to her farm in Wisconsin. And she's going to have a whole bunch of cheeses at the FET. I mean, this is one of many. She has some that have flavors added to them. She has some that are aged. So it's kind of cool to, like, one cheese, Gouda, and then you can taste, like, five different versions from the same producer. And it's, like, they're all pretty different from one another. So, again, that to me is the cool opportunity about having all that cheese in one place. She'll be in the Cheeselandia tent, which is the Wisconsin tent. We have three makers from Wisconsin, and then we have, like, a sort of an installation of other Wisconsin cheesemakers who aren't going to be at the festival, but whose cheese will be presented. And it's like they've got a cheese Ferris wheel. So, like, I don't think it's not like a Ferris wheel you can ride on, but it's like a Ferris wheel of cheese.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's going to be kind of...
Well,
yeah.
let's shift and tell people about the festival so that we can make sure that they know what to do and where to go if they've been thinking about it, and then we'll switch back to the cheeses because I want to make sure everybody knows about how to come out and what to do.
Awesome. Well, you have to buy a ticket and come eat cheese is the requirement.
There we go.
But no, it's this Saturday, the 16th of November. It is being held at the New Orleans Jazz Museum at the old U.S. Mint. We have VIP doors opening at 11, general admission opening at 12, and the festival's going until 4. And basically, you do need a ticket to get in, so it's a ticketed festival, but any ticket, no matter what level you buy, gets you in the door, and you can taste as many cheeses as you want. And from there, if you want to buy, we have a ticket that has, drink tickets included in it, three free drinks, and we have VIP tickets that get you into a lounge with special cheeses and food and open bar. And so
so that's at Esplanade and
Decatur? Esplanade between and North Peters. Yep.
Right. So get out there.
And it's an outdoor festival, but it's supposed to be perfect on Saturday. Perfect in this northerner's opinion. 60 and sunny, so I'll take it.
Yeah, that's perfect.
That's perfect cheese eating
weather. That's better than today, because it's a little brisk for me today.
Yeah, it would be hard to sit outside maybe for hours.
Well, but not necessarily. If you have a little bubbly cheese, that's what Beatrice and I were talking about next Thursday,
right?
Is you're going to warm right up. If anybody has been, I know it's only 2 years old. This is only the second year, and it's sold out. And if that doesn't, other than Saturday, okay, so it was just these two events. She has an event tonight. She's skipping out of here and running off to afterwards. It's close by, thank goodness. And then a Friday event, but Saturday is not. Get out there. You can buy tickets to the door.
You can. They're a little more expensive day of. So if you're thinking you really want to come, buy them in advance because you'll save a little money.
Well, look at the weather. I mean, it's going to be perfect.
But yeah, you can buy them day of. Sure.
Get out there. If anybody went last year and wants to tell us how it was, or if anybody has questions for Liz about
your
Thanksgiving is
cheese
two
questions.
Weeks off, okay? Thanksgiving is 2 weeks away. If you have any questions about what to buy, what to get, if you're looking for some inspiration, get out there. If you want to call and ask a question, 260-6368. Don't be shy. Steven, where are you? Are you a cheese eater? He's one of our fantastic listeners and callers. And Gregory, he must be working today. But because he is our cheese and wine connoisseur at Equistipaces. So
awesome.
Call us, 260-6368. Talk to Liz. Otherwise, it is Saturday. 11 for VIP, 12 for entry. And it's going to be for 4 hours, and you eat cheese for 4 hours.
And listen to music. We have an amazing lineup of great live music. And also, we have some, like, cheese spectacles going on. So we have a grand entrance with our MC, Trixie Minx, that will involve a second line band and an 80-pound wheel of Swiss Gruyere. And it's going to be pretty awesome. And then we have some of the best chefs in the city competing on our main stage at 1 o'clock to see who can break open a giant wheel of cheese the fastest. So our,
like, cut it up,
like crack the wheel. So okay. our headlining battle royale is going to be Dan Stein of Stein's
yep.
Market and Deli.
Yep.
And Mason Hereford of Turkey and the Wolf yep. and Molly's Rise and Shine. And they are each going to be given their own 80-pound wheel of Italian Parmigiano Reggiano. It's a two-year aged wheel of cheese. It's like a rock, a giant boulder. And there's this like traditional set of tools that you use to crack open a wheel of Parm. It's not like a chainsaw. It's like these little knives and little spades. And they're going to have to break that wheel open. And then we're going to send the wheel over to another chef who's going to be tossing fresh pasta in the wheel of cheese.
Oh my God.
So you can eat
delicious.
Pasta with like a grappa cream sauce that's like tossed in a giant wheel of cheese. So, you know,
it's like, going to be
if
a
that
good
sounds
time.
Bad, then don't come.
Okay.
Because, you know,
it's going to be a fantastic time.
There's lots of cheese in all its many forms.
And it's all cheese. And I just simply cannot think of a better way to spend your Saturday than with all cheese. And I think you have little cheese, like for kids to come,
oh,
right?
Yes. Is it the petit fromage
yes.
ticket? Yeah, for kids under 17. So
perfect.
But, yeah, I mean, my kids
Take
will be
the
there.
Kids.
Bring your kid. Like, I don't know about your kids, but my kids eat a lot of cheese.
Okay, we have a caller. It's one of my favorite people, my favorite listeners of the show. And I think he does have quite an interest in cheese. So, Alan, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Hi.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
I think it's colder in New Orleans than it is up here in Seattle.
Probably. I'm going to Seattle in 3 weeks. So, yeah, I'm expecting some temperate weather when I get there.
Oh my goodness! So you're gonna just eat nothing but oysters up here.
That's what I do. I do a lot of oyster eating when I'm in town. I visit Seattle regularly for work, and I do eat a lot of seafood when I'm there.
I bet that's a great cheese town, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah,
it is. And as a matter of fact, you know, we have a block from my house because I live near a major supermarket it's a local. We have a bunch of them in Oregon and Washington State. It's Fred Meyer's. And inside the Fred Meyer's, there's a Murray's.
Yes, there is.
Also, inside of QFC stores, too, is Murray's also implanted in supermarkets in New Orleans, too?
The last thing I spearheaded before I left Murray's was our partnership with a supermarket chain called Kroger, which is the largest traditional supermarket chain in America. It's based in Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. And we started opening Murray's cheese departments within Kroger supermarkets. Kroger owns Fred Meyer and QFC. That was the last division that I opened before I left Murray's. And actually, that program was so successful, there are now 450 Murray's cheese shops within supermarkets that Kroger owns around the country, and Kroger bought Murray's in 2012. So that was like, it went really well, and the cheese is in Alaska now.
Wow. So, well, thanks to having that so close by. I've got in my hand a little chunk of it's a blue cheese. It's blue D. Now, I'm not pronouncing this right. Bleu d'Auvergne, is it?
Yeah, Bleu d'Auvergne. Yes, it's a blue. It's a French blue from Auvergne. That's where it gets its name from.
Yeah,
it's a great one.
So, are all blue cheeses just a type of Roquefort, or are we talking completely two different types of cheeses?
Oh, that's a great question. So, Bleu is the style, and Roquefort is an example or a type of blue cheese, as is Bleu d'Auvergne, as is English Stilton. So it's not that there are types of Roquefort. It's that Roquefort is a type of Bleu. And what makes them all sort of cousins is that when a cheesemaker is making a blue cheese, they add mold spores to the milk during the cheesemaking process, and that mold grows with exposure to air. So after the wheel is formed and it goes into its aging room, it starts to get blue on the outside, and then it gets holes poked in it, and the air gets into the center of the cheese, and the mold starts to grow in the center. And that's where that blue veining or, you know, blue puck marks come from is the mold that was added by the cheesemaker. So, and you can make blue cheese from any milk type. You can make it in any country. There are mild ones. There are really spicy, strong ones. So there's, like all cheese, there's a spectrum of possibility.
What's your favorite, Alan?
Well, I probably the Roquefort, I think. Is that the king?
It is often considered to be the king of blue cheese. Yeah, it's a French blue made out of sheep milk, and it is definitely a stronger blue cheese compared to some of the sort of like softer, more buttery brie type blue cheeses. But it's one of my favorites and can't be beat with a sip of something sweet or a little bit of dark chocolate. It's fruit.
Yeah.
But that salty, sweet contrast is really awesome.
So the one that I have a sample of, and I haven't opened it yet, the Bleu de Verne,
yes.
You say?
So that's like, I would, if you're thinking about flavor on a, like a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of how intense it is, I would put Roquefort at like an 8 or a 9, and I would put Bleu de Verne at like a 5 or maybe a 6. So it's going to be
a little milder.
You'll find it's a little more buttery and a little less, it doesn't have as like long a finish. It might not be as mushroomy tasting. But it's definitely complex and really sort
of
interesting.
What do you pair it with?
I mean, in general, like all blues, I kind of take the same approach. So I reach for something sweet when I'm pairing with blues because they all have more salt than many other styles of cheese. One of my favorite things is dried dates, and you can pop. This is actually a great thing for the holidays coming up. Like I do this a lot for Thanksgiving or just like when I have people come over at the last minute. You can keep dates in your pantry because they're dried. They don't go bad. And you cut them in half and you take the pit out, and then you stuff a little bit of blue cheese inside the date and pop it in the toaster oven under the broiler for like 2 minutes. And you get this like incredible little like candied sweet date shell with this filling of salty sort of softened.
Oh my goodness, Alan, how good is this
blue cheese?
Oh,
of any type. It works with all blue cheeses and it's always delicious. And if you want to wrap it in bacon, I love to do that, but if you're a vegetarian you wouldn't do that.
There
but
it.
I'm not. Mm-hmm. So I do.
No, that sounds wonderful. One last question, and maybe am I crazy for thinking that gorgonzola reminds me a lot of blue cheese, and is that because gorgonzola also has that?
Yeah, it's another kind of blue cheese. So no, you're not crazy at all. It's like blue. Think of blue as like a giant umbrella, and there are many different cheeses that you know stand under that umbrella. Gorgonzola is absolutely one of them. So it's just another style of another example of what a blue cheese can be. So as long as it's got that blue-green mold on the inside, it's a blue. And, Gorgonzola. I mean, the Italians would tell you that's the king of blue cheese, but the French would tell you Roquefort.
I love – do you prefer a Gorgonzola, Alan, over another type? Because I absolutely love Gorgonzola, and maybe because it's more milder?
Yeah, there's – I mean – not to further complicate the conversation, but there's two types of gorgonzola. So the Italians make a creamy gorgonzola. They call it dolce, which means sweet. And it's very, it's much milder. And then they make a piccante or a mountain style that's more like Bleu de Verne, more like that middle range 5-6 on a scale of 1 to 10. It's a little confusing because there are cheeses made in the United States that take the names of European cheeses, but are made here. And so we have gorgonzola, which is a blue cheese made here. It's very different from gorgonzola made in Italy. The Italian gorgonzola is better. So that's also something I kind of look at, where the provenance of the cheese. And if it's using a famous European name and it's made here, oftentimes, although Marika is a great example, not always, but like oftentimes the European original, if it's not better, it's at least different. Worth trying the original.
And what do you think of Beechers?
I love Beechers. Kurt Damier is one of my like old
Alan
buddies.
Alan loves Beechers, Steve.
He's the owner of Beechers. They make amazing. They're a great example of like, so they make a beautiful cheese called Flagship, which you would look at it and say, oh, it's a cheddar. And it's made like a cheddar, and it looks like a cheddar, but it's got a little bit of a twist in the recipe and in the cheese making, and the flavor is very different from what most of us think of cheddar as tasting like. So it's like kind of like what Allie experienced with the Gouda here. It's like, oh, it's not what I was expecting it to be.
Well,
and it's better. I mean, I think it's delicious.
Not to embarrass Allie, but so, you know, her oyster shells, some of the, they're different sizes. I used the bigger ones and put crab meat, Dungeness lump crab meat on that, and put that on the grill and put just, you know, before I take it off, a little bit of Beecher's cheese and make kind of an au gratin, you know?
That does not sound bad. That sounds pretty good. And that cheese is a little sweet. I don't know. That sounds delicious. I think that would work quite nicely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling
in,
Alan.
You're so welcome. Thanks for calling.
We'll talk to you later. Okay. Oh my gosh. We're getting so close. Liz, let's, y'all go Saturday. We're going to finish out these cheeses, but y'all go Saturday this weekend. 11 VIP tickets or 12 on general admission entry. Bring your kids, eat cheese all day, get edification on like what you should pair with what coming up, you know, if you're going to do a cheese spread for holidays. But Liz, let's hit these ones and we'll try to wrap ourselves up.
Okay, the third one I brought you is called Smokin' Goat.
Smokin' Goat.
And I brought
it's a goat gouda?
It's not a goat gouda. It is a goat cheese. But I brought it because most people hear goat cheese and they think of the fresh crumbly stuff you put on your salad. And one of the things I love about tasting lots of cheeses is that you learn that your expectations are not necessarily all that's out there. So Smokin'.
I can taste that tang of the... Yeah.
But it's a firm, it and looks a like a Gouda, and it's smoked. So this is a Spanish goat cheese. It comes, the importer is Mitica Forever Cheese. Michelle's like one of the most sort of like leading experts on Mediterranean cheeses in the U.S., and she's got lots of goat and sheep milk cheeses that she'll be bringing that are like not what you think. She'll have Manchego, which a lot of people know and love, but she's got a lot of like really random stuff from Spain and Italy that you've definitely never heard of, and the Smokin' Goat is one. So
it's yummy.
Yeah, totally, and not like what people think goat cheese is going to be.
This is going to be my favorite.
Yeah, well, this is, you've already sort of given yourself away. Yeah. The next one is an aged Gouda, Dutch, and for people who know Gouda as like the red wax cheese, aged Gouda is very different. It's more like Parmesan. It's like butterscotchy and nutty, and you said like crunchy in texture.
I love the crystallization.
And this is 18 months old.
I'm just starting to get it like right there.
Yeah. And this cheese is called Beemster. But it's like...
I can taste a little bit of the crunch in it.
Yeah. Cheese people call it like cheese candy. It's like fudgy and...
Remember rock candy as a kid?
A little butterscotchy. And yeah. And then you get the crunch. So
yummy.
Yeah. I bite down and I'm like... Can everybody hear the crunching when I bite on it? Because it is crunch. I mean, it
does I'm
crunch.
Trying not to be impolite and eat into the
microphone.
Yep.
I should.
So good.
Do that as well. And then your last one I mentioned, always end on the blue if you're going to have a blue.
I feel like blue and Gouda right next to each other is so good.
Yeah, but you can see how the flavors are. They're getting like bigger and more intense and more lingering. And the last one is one of my favorite American blue cheese
that's
makers.
That's creamy. It's delicious.
Point Reyes out of Northern California. So this is their original blue. It's like their flagship cheese. And they make a couple different blue cheeses and just sort of like a seminal Northern California producer.
This is fantastic. Well, we're wrapping up. We've got just a couple of minutes left. I just want to thank Liz for coming in and opening our minds up to all these different types of cheeses. I don't feel as embarrassed as I thought I would at the beginning of this.
Oh, no.
I'm definitely going to start trying some different ones because I've basically found the ones I loved and then just stuck with that.
Yep.
But I'm going to start pushing the envelope and trying a few different more. But this has been fantastic. I hope you all have enjoyed the show. Tomorrow you've got Don, the gourmet neighbor. I think he lives across the lake, so he's coming in. He's going to talk with y'all. I don't know what about, but he's a very interesting man, so he's going to do it. But Liz and Beatrice Germain came in from the French American Gulf Coast Chamber of Commerce. Liz is spearheading this pâté de fromage this weekend. It's going to be fantastic, especially after all these cheeses I'm tasting. Y'all are going to be in capable hands. It's going to be great. Thanks, y'all. You're listening to 105.3 FM HD2. Have a great night. See you Friday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.